Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick. President Trump says the United States is locked and loaded should North Korea act unwisely in its escalating nuclear standoff. It was the third time in the last week that the president suggested that the United States was ready to take action on North Korea, but it doesn't necessarily indicate any changes in tactics or strategy, at least not yet. Joining me to talk about the latest escalation between North Korea and the United States is the Pentagon's former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy between 2014 and 2016. She's Christine Warmoth. She's now Director of the Resilience Center at the Atlantic Council. Christine, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
This standoff with North Korea, in many of its qualities, Christine, is nothing new. We know that. It goes back many decades. But how is President Trump's approach here different than his predecessors?
Well, I think President Trump is clearly using much more muscular, and I think some would say, you know, inflammatory rhetoric in communicating with the North Korean regime than we've seen previously. But you're right that the sort of the underlying dynamics of what's happening between the U.S. and North Korea are pretty similar to what they've been in the past.
Do you think that statements like locked and loaded or fire and fury have any tangible effect on the North Koreans, on President Kim, or do they sort of price it in to the heated rhetoric game of a nuclear standoff?
There's been this argument that using the language of fire and fury and locked and loaded is speaking to the North Koreans in a way that they will understand. I think they understand our language perfectly well, and the overheated language, again, tends to, I think, run the risk of alarming, if not the North Koreans, certainly our allies in the region. I think, you know, world leaders have had 6 or 7 months now to assess President Trump. And it may well be that the Kim Jong-un regime is pricing in, as you said, some of this into the way that President Trump speaks.
So that's the rhetoric on the international stage, Christine Warmoth. Let's talk about negotiations, because back-channel talks have been reported to have been going on with the North Koreans for weeks or months, even as these statements fly around the news media. What do we know about those talks?
Well, I personally certainly don't know the details of those talks, which are secret and are classified. But I can imagine from my previous experience that, you know, they may have started, for example, to talk about the various Americans that are being held as prisoners by the North Koreans. Some of those conversations, for example, may have started around the case of Otto Warmbier, the student who tragically died shortly after he was released from North Korea. So it's not unusual for the administration, again, whether it's Democratic or Republican, to have quiet talks with the North Koreans at various points in time. Sometimes the North Koreans reach out and indicate an interest in some sort of negotiations. Sometimes in the past, the United States has felt that it was an appropriate time to reach out and see if there was any interest from the other side in negotiations. So I suspect what's happening now, or what's reported to be happening now, is something along those lines. And those channels can be very helpful, frankly.
And it sounds like you feel that there's still an understanding in the Trump administration and the national security establishment that what's going on with North Korea is not an intent to launch or a threat to launch, but new dynamics in an ongoing, if not tense, set of negotiations between the United States and North Korea and even China.
Yes, I think I'm sure that there's an understanding in the Trump administration that what the North Koreans are doing is continuing what they have been trying to do over the past decade, which is to, you know, build the capability to have an intercontinental ballistic missile and to miniaturize a nuclear weapon and mate those two things together so that they would have a weapon able to reach the United States. And they want that as, frankly, the ultimate guarantor of their regime's safety. They've been on that path. None of that, the overall trajectory, is particularly new. You know, I think the Trump administration and President Trump himself has said very starkly that it is unacceptable to the United States for the North Koreans to achieve that capability. Some would argue that President Trump, in saying it so clearly, has drawn his own red line. And certainly we know the challenges and, some would say, you know, pitfalls of drawing very stark red lines. I think that's a place where this administration is different in that they have said unequivocally that it is unacceptable for the North Koreans to achieve the mating of an ICBM with a miniaturized nuclear weapon.
And the red line you're referring to, of course, was one that President Obama drew in Syria concerning Assad's use of chemical weapons. That line was crossed with not much response from the United States. Christine Wormuth, so do you see a fundamental shift in this situation between the United States and North Korea? And what do we expect from China now that maybe we're not in an imminent launch situation, but a new type of Cold War style standoff where ultimately it's about negotiation?
I don't see this as a fundamental shift to something new. That said, I don't want to underplay or, you know, underestimate by any means the seriousness of what we've seen the North Koreans able to do in terms of developing an ICBM and reportedly being able to miniaturize a nuclear weapon. That's very significant from our standpoint. But I think the dynamics of deterrence, you know, we need to remember that the North Koreans know that if they ever were to launch some sort of nuclear weapon, whether it's against South Korea or Japan or the United States, that would absolutely be the end of the regime. Kim Jong-un knows that. Similarly, we in the United States, I think, know very well the seriousness of having a situation arise where, you know, there's the possibility of nuclear weapons use on our homeland. So neither side wants that. In terms of China, I think the one thing that China shares in common with us is the desire to keep Kim Jong-un from having a nuclear weapons capability because they don't want the peninsula to be destabilized. And because of that, I think China will, as we've seen, they supported the recent resolution in the UN Security Council and have at least said that they will fully enforce the very strong sanctions that were put in place because of that resolution. China in the past has not always lived up to its words in terms of implementing sanctions. So an important thing will be to see how fully and aggressively does China implement the sanctions that have been put in place. That's really the key.
Christine Wormuth, the director of the Resilience Center at the Atlantic Council, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.